Cool. So you're joining us for another episode in these weird and testing times. We're trying to reach out to kind of different people. And we had a really interesting guy on the podcast today, Gary from Endurance Business and Multisports Research, Jack.
I like how you missed out his surname there.
I got it right in the episode.
To be fair, I mean, I really enjoyed this podcast. I really enjoyed chatting to Gary. We could have gone on for hours about endurance sport and behind the scenes. And obviously, he goes on to talk about testing he's done with Strava and different environments. So yeah, really, really interesting talk, actually. It definitely got me thinking last night after we recorded. So,
I think you see all these like data reports, they come out at certain points, like, oh, Strava's percent of people is up by X amount. And you think, oh, well, that must have taken a lot of work to go into. And like, this is the guy that does it.
Yeah, no, for sure.
One of the people out there that does it. So, yeah, he's got a broad range of knowledge on the whole subject. He seems to be really... really key in with like endurance sports and understanding them all. So it was great chat, interesting.
And what I really like is the fact that they're quite interested about breaking into OCR. So we all know they're quite heavily on the triathlon, they're quite heavy on the running, on all those different cycling, obviously. And they're sort of sniffing in the bandwagon of the OCR range. So hopefully OCR is on its way up and we'll start to get a lot more of this type of data and sort of, you know, buzz around OCR as well as like cycling and what have you. So yeah, all promising stuff.
Well, yeah. Heading to the episode now, guys. Enjoy. I'm sure you'll learn something from it, as me and Jack did as well.
Yeah, enjoy the episode, guys.
So we're joined today by Gary Earthenbaugh from Multisports Research and also endurancebusiness.com. Gary, how are you doing?
Hi, guys. Good to see you. How are you doing?
You actually did screw that up, Luke. I'm quite impressed.
as a win on the name pronouncing side.
The intro. The intro was good.
So obviously we're in weird times, Gary, and you do a lot of research into the endurance sports business. What kind of stuff have you been focusing on at the moment with the lack of endurance sports happening?
Yeah, well, I suppose to answer that question, stuff I've been focusing on has not been a lot because all our projects dried up. I think like a lot of people, everything just went really, really quiet as soon as the lockdown happened. And I think the thing that I realized, and I knew all along, and we all know this, but how interconnected the endurance sport space is. Mm-hmm. Everything is connected to events. And when there are no events, there's kind of like a house of cards scenario that the whole industry is faced. We've seen it in every country around the world. It's not just unique to the UK. Yeah. So that's the thing that kind of scares me a bit, but it's also an opportunity, I suppose. And as we know, obviously we discussed, you know, before, you know, coming on the call properly, there are more important things than endurance sport, and people are losing their lives and risking their lives. So you've got to put it in context, haven't you?
Definitely. It's a serious situation happening in the world globally, which is affecting a lot of things. And obviously we do wish everybody to be well, safe, and give thanks to NHS workers who are doing a great job.
Big clap tonight.
Yeah, definitely. At 8 o'clock, I think, again.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's having a huge effect on all sports, not endurance sports, but... I think from one thing, from the back end, we are seeing a rise of the virtual realm. What's your thoughts of seeing this kind of expand and explode? I've seen a lot of conflicting things coming out of Zwift. People saying, oh, the pros are coming on Zwift. They're killing it. Belgium rider got banned from Zwift because his data was too high. Something crazy, about like 800 watts or something. They were like, you're cheating.
Yeah, well, I suppose the whole virtual space is fascinating. It has been for a while. Zwift, you know, I'm sure like with you guys, I've been on Zwift for probably a couple of years now. And there's certainly been a lot more people on there in the last few weeks. The fact they added a third, you know, they opened it up to three worlds. Mm. Is it 30,000 over the weekend? That's just going to keep on rising. So for those who've got shares in Zwift, well done. There are obviously other platforms are available. I think, you know, we see brands with cycling, like RGT Cycling.
Peloton.
Really interesting, the whole realism that they've got, mm-hmm. different proposition to Whistler, seemingly less gamified, maybe more for the purest roadie, if you like.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's Ruvi, which has, the more real world with an avatar sort of stuck on top. And the fact that Ruvi did this deal with Iron Man, I think, is really interesting. So I think that, Virtua is fascinating, but I suppose the thing for me, Virtua isn't inclusive. Not everybody can do Virtua, either practically or financially.
Mm-hmm.
So the kind of rise of virtual runs is good, but part of me sort of questions whether what's the difference between going out, sticking Strava on, checking a segment, and doing a virtual run. I think probably the important thing is that, the virtual run gives an opportunity for some fundraising, for some collectivity, for something that brings us together as a community, perhaps a little bit more than a solo initiative. But fascinating. And it's only going to evolve because obviously a lot of race organisers at the moment only have virtual as an option.
Mm. Yeah, very true. I think at this moment in time, like you're saying, with virtual, right now, because we can't connect, we cannot go out and run with other people, we can't meet up and go do runs together. I think virtual is probably a great thing at this moment, but when we come full circle and we come out of this, we may see people go back to having more community, and they want to go and run with their clubs, or they still want to do the virtual stuff, but they still want to obviously connect with people in real life.
Do you not think, I run a bootcamp business, and I've got a lot of community people in that business. So they're not top athletes at all. They're just every sort of day weekend warriors. A lot of those guys have jumped on this virtual thing to have a sense of community, like you said. I think the guys that were on it before, so for instance, like your Ironman, your guys that were using it for a serious training aid, have sort of gone, oh, okay, everyone's come into this, wait for them all to drop out. And it's a bit like gym in February, isn't it? Everyone comes in the gym, you have a few months in the gym, everyone, you can't get on a bloody machine because everyone's on it. And then all of a sudden come May, you're only left with the serious gym goers again, and everyone's gone. Do you not think we'll have that same sort of thing? Like the community will drop out as soon as people can go back to 10K races, and you'll just be left with only the top end guys using Zwift and all these other things.
It's a really interesting, question. It's the classic crystal ball question that no one knows the answer to.
Yeah.
So I was on an industry call. So I work with the Triathlon Industry Association. Mm-hmm. And so British Triathlon got reached out, so we need to have some industry discussions. This is a couple of weeks ago as the crisis just started. And they were really interesting. We had two groups. One was a race directors and coaches group, and the other was a brands and retail group. So we had a lot of big brands there. I won't name drop, but it was a fascinating call just to kind of hear what people are going through. All these awful questions about flowing staff, et cetera, et cetera. But someone came up with a really interesting analogy was when all of this blows over and we're able to go out again, it will be like pigeons flying from the loft. And I thought, I really like the analogy. And then the call finished and I thought, but what if the pigeons choose to stay put?
Yeah.
What if actually we're so freaked out by this, because this is different to anything we've ever experienced before.
Mm-hmm.
So the analogy I might come up with is if there was a big volcano and the world was covered in toxic ash and we all had to stay indoors, and then 2 months later, the air had cleared and we're able to go out again. One can presume that we go back to previous habits.
Yeah.
But because we're dealing with a virus that's transferred from people to people, and until we've got a vaccine, we've always got to question what the motivations of people are. So we're doing some research at the moment, trying to understand motivations for athletes. So this is something we're doing for free as a service to the industry, where we're asking, a variety of things like, what type of training are you doing now? How has it changed? Are you doing more indoor versus outdoor? When do you expect to start racing again? When do you expect, are you buying gear to the same level that you were usually? Or do you expect to be buying gear more when this all ends? So just so that businesses can kind of plan this, because at the moment, I just think there's so much uncertainty.
Yeah. See, I think that's an interesting one when you're talking about buying gear, because at the moment, we're seeing a lot.
You can't get it.
One, you can't get. And two, you're seeing a lot of companies offer good discounts at this time because people are obviously doing a lot more online shopping. They've got more to buy. But I was looking, oh, I need to buy some more race kit. And I was thinking, well, I don't need it at this moment in time. I'm just going to wait until I'm closer. Yeah. I don't know when my next race is, potentially our next race is in July. Yeah. So it's like, do I need to buy it today or do I need to? But even there's a huge discount on it. And I'm still like, it's hard at this moment in time. I think people are very cautious about spending because you just don't know.
Well, exactly. You've got the uncertainty of when can I race again, and you've also got the economic factor of like what's happening with my job, and you know, looking at the obviously we're going to have this viral impact, which is the short term immediate impact, and then the tail of this is going to be really long because the economic uncertainty, job security, all of that is going to be added into the mix as well, which is going to obviously affect our decisions to buy, our decisions also to race. Do we want to get on a plane again to go and race and make a, you know, a racecation out of something? Lots of issues around that will obviously come out in the wash in due course.
Yeah. And I think obviously we're seeing a lot of top end athletes do the online stuff as well. I'm guessing to still be paid by their sponsors to, obviously you've got the Super League Triathlon. They put an esports squad together now to race on Zwift. Lionel Sanders, triathlete, he was on Zwift and he actually beat Matthew Van Der Poel in like a race, which was pretty crazy. So you're seeing a lot of them doing it for like sponsors and people watching that online. Might be a way for them to supplement because it's going to be hard for like maybe not your top end athletes, but your people who are a little bit lower that have to like they have to go to the races to earn that money. Are you seeing like a bit of a?
Well, even if you look bigger than that, even if you look at football teams, you know, below the Premier League, football teams are struggling because they're not getting the numbers through the ticket sales to even like pay their staff. So it's like, hold on, if that's happening to quite an established football team, what the heck's happening to a cycling team or a running team or, you know, anything like that? It's crazy, really. I know Nike and that, people like that, they can survive potentially, but some of your smaller levels, goodness knows.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It all sport is affected profoundly. You're absolutely right. And, you know, obviously there's been a bit of criticism about, you know, Premier League players and wage cuts and all that. And that's, you know, probably a debate that we don't want to. but the reality is for most endurance sport athletes, they don't get anywhere near the kind of payday that A, they deserve, given what they do in terms of their athletic ability.
Probably if not more, yeah.
Yeah. And you know, I think, you're absolutely right. You mentioned Super League. I think it's, you know, it's great that, you know, they're putting their athletes out there. It's giving them exposure. I think esports is a really interesting space. It has been for a while. Obviously, Swiss funding, they had a few tranches of funding and a lot of that has been towards obviously encouraging the run side. I think run for Zwift is probably a bit more challenging, A, because nobody's
treadmill.
Look, very few people have a treadmill at home.
Yeah.
And we can't go to gyms anyway. And really why, you know, a lot of people just prefer to run outdoors when they can. But certainly the whole esports space and how that interacts, you know, with triathlon, looking at that as well, you know, and I think, you know, I think you saw the release from Super League yesterday showing that triathletes can ride just as well as pro cyclists. That's going to be an interesting dynamic to observe. I think, is it the first classics race this weekend, isn't it? So
yeah, it's going to be
the London race. I'll be looking forward to that one.
And you've got Ironman doing their first kind of virtual races now. Yeah. And they've put, I actually kind of like how they did it with having the pros kind of side by side on the video screen and they're going in.
Yeah.
And they're doing the second one, which is a 5150.
Yeah.
This weekend, which should be interesting. But
see, I'm really bad at this, you see, because I did triathlon for like 6, 7, 8 years. All I've tried to do for the last 3 or 4 is avoid triathlon because I know as soon as I see something like that, I'm just like, bing, bing, bing. You know, I go back in the shed and look at the time trial bike and go, oh, could I? You know, because I tell you what, as of all the things I've done, riding a time trial bike at serious speeds in an Ironman is probably the most fun. I think the worst amount of fun I've had, but at the same time, but the most fun I think I've ever had, you know, I don't know. It's just weird, isn't it? Like, I don't know how our minds work, but So I might need to get back into all, involved in all this, get the time to turbo out. And I tried to get on rollers for the first time the other day. That was hilarious.
Just be careful you're on your rollers. It's been a while on the time trial bike.
Yeah, definitely. Especially
the sideways.
He only posted a video of him on the roller successfully, not the five videos.
Others. The fails beforehand.
The fails, weren't they?
Yeah, but good fun. Yeah.
Obviously, with this statistic side of it, Gary, what are you kind of focusing on? What are you kind of seeing with trends at the moment? What's the main bit you're working on, if you can talk about any of it?
Yeah, I mean, some of the stuff I can talk about. So we're working this project for the Triathlon Industry Association, which is all around participation and expenditure. Mm-hmm. So it's a big survey, which we have live at the moment, and that asks about spend and participation in 2019. So the issue with that is obviously people have a lot more pressing things on their minds. So we're probably going to go slow on that, not push that survey too hard. We've got a lot of prizes in the mix for that survey. You can win lots of events that aren't currently on.
Various will be in the future.
Yeah, indeed. And lots of gear too, and you know, trip to Club La Santa and lots of stuff like that to incentivize people.
Please
share the link afterwards. You're more than welcome. As I mentioned, we're doing this other research to understand propensity to buy and also attitudes to training and in the current crisis. So that's an immediate piece that we're doing at the moment, which, as I mentioned, we're doing that for free. That's a free offering to any race director who wants to put out to their athletes. That's just got started in the US, the UK, and we've got some international events working with us too. And that's all endurance sport. So that's, we ask obviously what types of sports you do at the outset, but that's trying to understand it from the context of all endurance sports, be as open as possible.
Nice. With it being a very recent survey, are you seeing any kind of trend, obviously, with more people doing exercise now? Because I know for myself, when I'm going out for my run, my one run a day, I'm in I'm seeing a lot more people out running at this time, all throughout the day.
Non-runners.
Non-runners, but just more people going out and using that one run or that one bike ride. I've seen so many cyclists. Normally they'd stick to kind of evening time when the roads are quieter, but because roads are almost dead at the moment, are you kind of seeing that trend everywhere?
Yeah, but the two, I mean, obviously it's early days of the survey, literally went live this week, so we've got a few hundred responses. But having had a quick look earlier this morning, there's definitely a shift towards indoor and there's definitely a shift towards run, which is what we would expect. Yeah. As I say, I won't go through too much of it or bias the results or anything like that. The other stuff that we do in terms of research is we do work with Strava. I could talk a little bit about that because we did a study for them on clubs. Mm-hmm. So obviously brands will have their own Strava club. And we have a separate data set where we look at brands' engagement, post-interaction, et cetera, on what we might call traditional social. Traditional seems a really weird word, but basically Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube.
Yeah.
So we've got about 700 brands in the system that we track traditional social. And we work with Strava to look at a sample of 100 clubs that were owned by brands. So that could be the Rafa Club, the Ironman, New York Roadrunners, et cetera. It's a mix of coaching, events, gear, et cetera. And the thing that we found from that research was that if you use your Strava club, much like, let's say, your Facebook page, so you post like once a day on your Strava club and you put the same sort of post on, let's say, your Facebook or your Instagram page as you would on your Strava club, you will get more engagement, post interaction and growth on your Strava club, admittedly from a lower base, than you would on traditional social. The advantage of a Strava club is twofold. One is that if you subscribe, so let's say you follow Rafa on Strava, you will see every one of those posts in your Strava feed. And also, that post doesn't cost Rafa a penny. If you follow Rafa on Facebook, 10% or whatever the Facebook algorithm number is now, or followers of that Rafa club will see that organic post, but Rafa has to pay to reach the other 90-odd%. So the advantage of Strava clubs is that they're not pay to play. And you've got a genuinely, engaged and organic audience there. So any brand at the moment that's sitting there twiddling their thumbs, probably one thing I would say is, yeah, definitely. If you haven't done much with your Strava club, or if you haven't got a Strava club, do it now. Now, mm-hmm. Now's the time. Obviously, a lot of brands are, reassessing what they do with their business, but there's definitely an audience acquisition and engagement opportunity.
Now everyone's jumping on Strava going, quick.
Rage club.
But at what point do you go back with that information, Gary, and then all of a sudden someone jumps on that and they start making money from it? Because it is a business at the end of the day, is it not?
Yeah, well, Strava is, but they make their money from other means. So it's sort of paid challenges. So you don't need to do that. I mean, so Sigma Sport, the retailer in the Kingston area, around sort of London, West London. And I think they have done a challenge on Strava. Well, they've certainly done the one, but they do really, really well. They were like one of the top performing brands that we saw, simply because they were just sticking posts through their Strava club feed. It was just treating it like any other channel. The other advantage, obviously, is if you follow that club, you can then have leaderboards with all the stuff that Strava brings. But it doesn't cost you anything. So if I personally had a consumer facing brand, it would make a lot of sense to kind of plough some attention into that.
Yeah, it is true. As in, when on my Strava, when somebody likes a post or they're commenting, it seems more that I'll get an email notification as well as also a notification through my phone. Especially somebody commented on one of my posts the other day, and I was like, because I wouldn't have really noticed it as much if it was on like a Facebook or an Instagram. So I wouldn't have got the email. Sometimes notifications don't always come through. And I was like, I just had a little look at that. And then just more in kind of engagement. I find if you're posting into the clubs, that it's more direct. Like you say, you're seeing it directly. I'm not always missing those posts. You're kind of, it's in the club that you're a part of. You're like, oh, they're instantly. And I find, because it's directly into that club, you're not getting a lot of other stuff that you don't really care about. I go on my Facebook feed and I'm like, funny cat videos.
Yeah.
Funny cat videos.
Everything on Facebook now is an advert, isn't it? Like you literally go through, and even weirder, and this is like complete the sidetrack, we were talking about, what were we talking about? The Inca Trail the other day, me and my wife. And literally I went on Facebook and the first thing that came up was a video of the Inca Trail. And I'm like, that's like, they're listening.
They're listening to you, Jack.
But it is like that. It's getting like that, isn't it? And unfortunately, that then ruins using. And I know a lot of people that go off Facebook and have gone to, I've definitely gone more towards Instagram. I still use Facebook for business, admittedly. But I can definitely see that next trend going to more sports specific, like a Strava or equivalent. I personally, I know it's probably a dirty word, but I use Garmin. So we use the Garmin clubs and stuff. And it's probably the same thing there as well.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one thing we found from the research we've been doing in the UK is that across all multi-sport athletes, runners and so on, with this TIA research, I think it was 2 years ago, two and a half, three years ago, that Strava overtook Facebook in terms of regular weekly commenting and liking on your own activities and others' activities. The only so Facebook is ahead of Strava in terms of general social browsing. So basically, it's YouTube and Facebook used for general social browsing. But anything that is athlete specific, linked to an activity, it's a good two to three years ago that Strava overtook Facebook.
And that's really clever from Strava, because if you have even like my mother-in-law, she started running. And the first thing she thought was, oh, I'll get a Strava account. Probably not even heard of Strava, but yet she knew to get a Strava account. Really odd. Yeah. And it's like, okay, you want to be on Strava. But I suppose they see that as that's what we have to do. Because I suppose somewhere in their mind, they think Couch to 5K will get a Strava account, because probably their friend has gone, I'm on Strava. So all of a sudden, boom. And that's quite clever.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, it's something nice about seeing what your friends are up to. Obviously, there's obviously athlete stalking going on, I'm sure. Yeah. Oh no, he's putting out that much power, she's doing this.
Which actually, from a serious point, Gary, this is the reason why I came off Strava, because I found that a lot of people were using it more to, not me necessarily, but generally that was going on. People were looking, especially in our sport of OCR. I mean, OCR was very, you didn't know what was best for training, what people were doing.
Running, no one wants to see your poor 5K time, Jack.
No, but people do look at your training. And when you're a coach and you're selling those training plans, you can't be like detailing all your coaching plans on Strava. I mean, some people don't care, clearly, you know, but some people will nick that and use it. And you're like, well, hold on, I've got people over here paying for that. And you're just going on my Strava and nicking it. So that was a reason why I didn't have Strava. But
it is interesting you mention that. Like, myself and Jack were trained by the same coach a while ago. And there was some other people that were trained by him as well. And I used to just do my runs and put them on there. I didn't used to name them, just leave them what they were. But then there was a few other people that would do exactly the same run, and they would in Strava, like boom, 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 exactly what they did. And I was just like, I'm sure the coach that had programmed and you paid to do that wouldn't want you just throwing that info straight out there. Cause it's literally their week. And it's like day one, I did 5 400s and blah. And I'm like, well, that's exactly what the coach probably didn't want to.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah, it's a bit of a weird thing to do, isn't it?
But talking from a coaching side, Gary, have you done any statistical analysis on like coaching, or are you looking at that as well?
Yeah, so Training Peaks as a client. So we work closely. I can't talk massively about what we do, but so there are nuances within the coaching world that, and again, it comes back to the point around the interconnectivity of all of this. So coaches clearly in this current crisis are facing a cliff edge as much as anybody else, in that the reason most individuals have a coach, and I'll put personal trainers to one side in terms of general health and wellbeing, but from an endurance sport coach, as you said, whether it's OCR specific, triathlon, run, cycle, etc., they will have a goal, and that goal will be an event. So with no events, there's a potential knock-on effect as well. You know, coaches have training camps and they have other initiatives that, you know, require travel and so on. So the knock-on effect with coaching will be profound in the short term. Whether that's actually a long, coming back to that earlier question about our attitude to events, the fact that we're deprived of this and whether we are going to fly from the loft or whether we're going to stay put is obviously the key question. But I think if we all will go through a period of reassessment what we want to do with our lives, and I would expect that as long as events pick up, then coaching actually probably should get an upswing as a result. Yeah.
Okay. I'd be interested to see, because I'm a coach as well, Gary. It's very interesting to see, and I'm waiting to see if people actually reach out to me more in these times or less. Yes. Does that make sense? Like, I've currently kept all my coaching clients that I've on because they've all come to me and gone, what do we do? How do I train? Which is brilliant, because for me, I'm like, well, let's just sit tight. Let's do this. Let's do that. But how many more people out there right now going, let's take Luke, for example, you know, say, for instance, he wanted a coach right now, doesn't really know how his season's going, fancies a bit of Zwift, fancies a bit of road cycling, but doesn't really know if that's going to affect him. You know, should he be doing that? Should he be doing that in this type of periodization? Blah, blah, blah. I would imagine more people will jump towards coaches at the minute just for pure help.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, what the kind of been two parallel tracks that have gone on in the coaching market. You've had this sort of whole, and I'll use the quote finger marks as I speak, AI coaching, which in many respects is really it's a very clever algorithm that you know, I would be certainly unable to produce myself. But so there's a lot of intelligence that's gone into that. But is it artificial intelligence is a kind of moot point. So you've seen that we've seen a lot of apps come out doing that. And that would be a natural progression for a majority of apps that are out there as well. And often they can offer a lower cost proposition for the athletes, but nothing will ever replace that dialogue. And I don't think any one of those apps would ever say that dialogue between athlete and coach. And what you're saying is absolutely right. At this particular point in time, we really need to understand how we should be training. Because through some of the companies that I've dealt with, I had a really interesting discussion with a coach who's just saying, you should not be racing on Zwift really at all, was his line at the moment. Because for anyone who's ever done a Zwift race, they know it's, depending on how long that race is, it's like a 30-minute to 50-minute FTP test. It's utter agony. You know, instead of it being 20 minutes, like a standard FTP test would be, you're out there putting out maximum power, straining your cardiovascular system at a time where you've got respiratory virus floating around. And actually, if you think about it, and his argument was that, I'm not sure whether he had any evidence to back this up, but the argument was that you could have a greater propensity to catch the virus if you are overloading your CV system. And also, if you do catch the virus, you may have a greater difficulty in getting rid of it. So that coach relationship is so important. You're absolutely right. You need the guidance as to what you should be doing properly.
Generally, that's a hormone overload, isn't it? It's like you're completely smashing your hormones. Then your system's down, you're tired, you're fatigued. Guess what? You get a bit of a cough. And unfortunately, if you have underlying issues, well, it could be worse off for you. No, it's interesting you say that, because that's another thing with Strava, and that I was finding that a lot of people were going out and smashing their local segments. Yeah. They were doing it every day. And I'm like, that's fine once a week, two times a week, but you shouldn't really be doing speed sessions over and over and, but it's great, I feel fine. Yeah, you might do for a few months, but you get into July when you really want to smash that marathon or whatever, all of a sudden you've got a calf injury, you've got this, you've got that, wonder why, where that clever training comes in and having a coach to tell you. And unfortunately, that's what the AI, the Strava, the virtual thing can't really do. It can't say, whoa. And I know we have all these Garmin watches and smart technology, and for the guys that look into sort of heart rate variability and really do track that type of health stuff, that you can't get better than someone saying, I think you need to just chill out a bit.
Exactly. And as a coach yourself, you'd know where the warning signs are. Yeah. And as an athlete, you might not be noticing that heart rate drift that's not looking particularly healthy for the individual. No, you're absolutely right. Absolutely.
So that I think if we can find a virtual way, And I'd say this is if it goes on for much longer, say, for instance, they come out tomorrow and say, right, we're here for another 6 months or the rest of the year, then I do think that the virtual side of things has to change it way that we're not actually just smashing everyone, that we actually do find a clever way of being able to race and intelligent. Yeah, that's what I'm looking for. So an intelligent way of doing all this without actually killing ourselves. And if someone could come out with that, then boom.
We can do the virtual rest week.
Virtual rest week, I like it.
Virtual beer drinking week.
Virtual yoga. Yeah.
I suppose the other thing, just on that point as well, is I don't think it's necessarily such an issue for OCR, because the demographic seems to be slightly younger, but definitely for triathlon and cycle, you have a more aged demographic. Typically mid-40s and up would be your average age within, most cohorts within cycling and tri in most countries around the world. Really because the financial barriers are there for those sports. So whilst, it's great that you've got people continuing into their, middle age doing the sport, they've probably got even greater need to ease back and not smash themselves, which is again where that coach interface becomes ever more important.
And also I'm using this now to actually, like I said earlier, trying to try different things out. So for instance, like how my training has changed, coming back to your original question, is like, okay, so I'm in the house. There's only so much I can do on my upper body strength or running. So I do my running. What else? Let me work on stretching or yoga or breathing or just balance. While I'm stood here, I'm doing all my podcasts standing up and I'm massaging my foot on a ball. So it's just things like that. Like, ultimately, I wouldn't have done those if I had to be down the field training, coaching, personal training. But I've had that time now to just think, okay, what should I be doing? But I potentially wasn't doing because of just work, life, family, all that type of thing, So, and Luke can even contest that now because he's got a little baby in the house. So his time of life has just gone right out the window.
No time.
You're right. You just have to be intelligent and clever with all this training as well. You can still do it. Just do it with a sort of a clever head on, if you like, coach's head.
Yeah. Yes, definitely.
Even looking at kind of endurance was then, I'd say the pinnacle of the OCR racing this year was supposed to be, well, still is, in Abu Dhabi, the Spartan Race World Championships in December 4th or 5th, somewhere around that weekend. Maybe looking at something a bit more before that, say the Ironman World Championship in Kona. With all of these races being postponed or moved to different dates, do you think we're going to see a knock-on effect for qualification for these major events and also participation because of the travel thing we said about maybe people aren't going to want to travel as much, even though Kona is obviously the goal, the peak of the racing? Do you think that's going to have a bit of a play on from it?
Absolutely. I think the Ironman World Championships have a real challenge this year, because I think it's August is the last cutoff qualifier for Kona in October. So you're going to have a number of races between now and August that simply aren't going to go ahead as Kona qualifiers. So the field is going to be limited from in terms of qualification slots. That presents real challenges to the business, and whether they go more of a kind of showcase event with, you know, with more of a focus on the broadcast element and the pros that have already qualified, or where I mean, whether or not they've, well, I mean, obviously we just don't know how social distancing and lockdown will continue, whether they're actually able to do the event at all. I mean, the Tour de France, we've heard obviously about this idea of a spectator-free race, which kind of seems a bit weird, because all those aerial shots, we got the cool things going on in villages around France, they're obviously completely out. And at the same time, though, I kind of see where ASO are going with that, because it, at least, you know, we need sport, and broadcast media is crying out for sports content. There, you know, there is such a complete dearth of that, and that presents real opportunities perhaps for those races that can go ahead. I think, Abu Dhabi in December seems a bit safer, but again, still it is up in the air. I think that the idea that we're going to flatten the curve really quickly and this virus is going to go away is really probably a bit deluded.
Well, we heard yesterday, didn't we, a friend from Denmark said that Denmark have stopped all participation, mass participation, till September.
September.
That's the government come out and said who haven't actually got it that bad. Denmark's quite, you know, they seem to have got away with it, but they're shutting down till the end of September. So I wouldn't be surprised if most European countries follow suit.
Exactly, and if there was, you know, obviously at some point, hopefully some point soon, we can flatten the curve and we can actually go out, you know, socialize with the 2 meter rule. If you think, remember that really short, brief period that we were able to do stuff that before the full lockdown, mass participation events are not going to be top of the list in terms of relaxation, are they?
No.
So yeah, to go back to your point, I think that this year is going to be, you know, as the Queen said a few years ago, annus horribilis, and it's going to be very, very tough for a lot of race directors. And obviously now that all of these events, you know, they've spent their money. In terms of marketing, in terms of timing, and they at this point would start to be seeing, particularly into the summer season, of whether that's road racing for cycle, whether that's various run events and triathlon, you'd start to see registrations pick up. This is a kind of the busy season for registrations as we get into the summer. Clearly no one's registering, and that, you know, presents a real cash flow issue for the race organizers as well. You know, some of those race organizers have arguably not handled their communication that great in terms of the way that they communicated the whole refund situation. I don't know whether you necessarily want to get into that discussion anyway, but you can kind of understand, because they have spent a ton of the money and it is very, 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 very difficult situation.
Yeah, we had a little chat about the refund versus the postponement or the moving of a ticket to another event. We had a little chat on another podcast about that, and it's a difficult one because, as you say, racers have spent a lot of that money. They may have already pre-spent that on merchandise for the event, safety stuff, race location, and they may not be able to get that back. So from a personal point, if I had already paid for a race, I'm more than understand a moving instead of a refund. But then there's always the situation where some people may need that money right now because they're getting laid off, or they don't have a cash flow as they would do because they're obviously not working, etc. So it's a weird one at the moment. But
yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can be sure that any insurance policy that a race director's sitting on, the insurance companies are very, very good at kind of wiggling out of any business interruption clauses or whatever it might be. And probably, you know, to be fair, there are so many eventualities in insurance. They, if it's not in there specifically, they've got the ability to and legally probably the right to do that. But yeah, you're right. The situation when an event has been, if you think about it from the race organizer's point of view, if they've got a race and let's say it's July and they can't get a slot for the autumn for that particular race, and then they therefore, you know, defer everybody to next year. that, you know, it seems to be like the standard move that, that race organizers are doing. But again, if you think about it from the race organizers' point of view, they're just kicking the can down the road because they've still got the costs for this year and they're going to have the costs again for next year. Yeah. And so, okay, they can sit on the cash for this year, but they're not doing the event and they've spent some of that money. It does present a bit of an issue. I think the challenge happens, and it's always been a backlash situation on social when there's been no choice given to the athletes. Yeah. When it's basically been, we've spent all this money, therefore you're getting no refund or you're getting X percent. And that's when people go, well, hold on a minute, that doesn't feel right. Mm-hmm. And you look at Challenge Roth. So Challenge Roth, one of the world's most iconic triathlons in southern Germany. And I think, you know, they did a heartfelt video. They did a big long press release. They explained, you know, that that's a big event with big costs. It's a big, big issue for the local town and for everybody. And they gave the option to athletes is they waive part of the refund. Or, you know, and I think that there are creative things you can do. And it's likewise for charity partners. Maybe you allow or give an option for funds to go to the charity at this time. Mm. A lot of it, as you say, it comes down to an economic decision as well for the athlete. Because if you're looking at a few hundred pound event, like a expensive middle distance or full distance triathlon, that's different from, let's say, a less than 100 pound run event. But the same principle applies, I suppose.
So I think we're going to see, even if we do see the virus flatten out and then we come out of it within a month or two in the UK, I think we're going to see the effects go maybe for a year or maybe longer, because like you're saying, they may have kept the money for this year, but they're really not going to make that next year. They're going to take 2 to 3 years to really recoup that or even get back onto a level playing field. I've seen out there yesterday, the UFC, Ultimate Fighting Champion, MMA, are looking to rent a private island to put an event on, which is interesting. I've seen the Premier League are thinking about flying to Asia or places where the virus isn't as prevalent and putting football matches on so they can actually put them on TV. People are getting very, very creative and very out there with what they could do to have this going. The NBA were thinking about renting one casino and just playing games in the casino area and just putting that on like loop, which is...
It could become a bit like Big Brother, couldn't it? You get all the athletes living together and then you have all the bitching. It's a really good TV show. You come up with it there and there.
Yeah, well, that's what we could watch now. Instead of Tiger King, we could watch...
Just throw all the athletes in one big room. I love it. Week before Kona. Brilliant.
Well, I'm sure could there's... Imagine?
The it's hard enough having a Sky team, or what was the Sky team together, let alone, you know, like, who's going to be the team leader? Brilliant. Oh, I love it. And just coming back to around what you said, Gary, I think there's a lot of wives out there that are happy there's no sport on TV right now.
There's one right behind you now.
Well, I'm behind me right now. So there's always a win-win situation in this. It's called the wives.
Yeah.
Well, those handy jobs that you put off for all this time, getting done now.
My garden house looks pretty.
So with this going through, Gary, what after you're doing these surveys, what are you kind of aiming towards doing with the survey side of it later? Have you got any like projects that you not talk about, but let us know that what you're going to be working with in the future, or is it just sitting at the moment and then seeing what happens with the one?
Kind of, as I mentioned earlier on, like from a business point of view, we had a good year. It all looked great, and then obviously lockdown happened, and everything everything on in our pipeline was just stopped. So I'm hope that it comes back. As mentioned again, it's only money at the end of the day. There are more important things in life, and so there's, I suppose, for what we're doing as a business is we're taking stock of what we do. We get more efficient at what we do. I mean, I have a model where I don't have permanent staff. I have a network of freelancers that I utilize. Mm-hmm. So I haven't got this whole issue around furloughing staff or anything like that. But I do have a really strong loyalty to these guys, and I want to give them work as much as possible. So, you know, the pipeline is important for me personally as much as it is for those guys. In terms of the projects that we're looking at, I think there's a lot in sports tech. There's some really cool products that will be coming out that I'm, you know, I'm on NDAs, and basically I have to be very, very careful what I say now because I get sued out of existence. So, but I think within, I think sports tech is going to be a fascinating area, and we're looking at lots of stuff around acceptance to certain types of technology, and, you know, the whole user interface side of things and what people expect. That isn't necessarily about artificial intelligence. It's obviously a kind of wide breadth of sports tech initiatives that are out there. There's a fair amount. We're doing a lot in cycle. The whole cycling space is really interesting, both from like whether that's at the premium end of cycle through to even like the whole ride to work. And, you know, probably I would expect that more to pick up. I think as people, those behaviors change and people go out, you know, we've seen bike shops be quite resilient in the current crisis. And you know, local independent bike dealers have really struggled for a number of years. And the fact that they're seen as a kind of a critical part of our infrastructure and are supported by government and allowed to stay open for servicing and those kinds of things is to be encouraged. And hopefully that will be a bit of a shift. I think maybe with all of this whole crisis, it would be pretty crap if we just go back to what we did before. I think it'd be really nice if the air pollution could stay as low as it currently is. If the world was a bit of a fairer, kinder place, and we appreciate people who work in the NHS, and do you know what I mean? I don't get all emotional and gooey.
I agree. And I generally think the longer they can keep, even if they do say, like, predicted that it's going to get better, I think actually would be better be here a little bit longer and just live this life a little bit more. So actually it does start to change people's way of lifestyles. And like you say, the amount of people, and it is good. I mean, we all moan about people going out, families and what have you, but at the end of the day, they're out there, they're walking with their kids, they're going to, they shouldn't be, but they're going in the parks and what have you. At least they're not sat inside playing PlayStation games, and or like in other places like Venice. I don't know if you've seen the water in Venice. It's like the cleanest it's ever been.
Yeah, you can see the fish. Yeah,
you've got dolphins coming in Italy. You know, like this is like,
yeah,
you know, it is just like crazy to think that actually man was killing the world at the same time.
Yeah,
you know, and now from a point of view of health style and lifestyle, I'm just kind of hoping that people do choose to run to work or cycle to work, because I mean the cycle to work scheme, that's the reason I got into triathlon, because that's exactly what I did. I got a cycle to work bike, and that's how it all started for me. That's a great scheme, actually. I really like that scheme.
Absolutely, and I think that if that momentum builds, clearly it's going to be government. This is the challenge we're going to have: is government's going to be paying this back for a very long time. Yeah. And so therefore, if cycle infrastructure is going to be top of the list is a really big question. And that is what we need in order to make this happen. And I think that, yeah, as you say, but people can still run to work, those that, or walk to work, or and maybe that behavior will be in place. We won't want to be stuck on public transport. You know, there may be that mindset where we just want that headspace going to and from work. And yeah, hopefully, as you say, that all of those other positives can kind of shine through.
Continue.
But we maybe need a bit more of this for that to be a bit more embedded, perhaps.
Yeah, 100%. What do they say, like 99,000 repetitions or something to becomes normal? So just keep everyone inside for a bit longer.
Yeah. Another 3 months for us then.
That's good.
So Gary, where can people find you then? Is it on the websites? Is that the best place to kind of...
So they can check out, obviously, from the research side of what we do, it's multisportresearch.com. So multisportresearch.com. And then, yeah, the business-to-business news site. So we have this business, as you mentioned at the beginning, called endurancebusiness.com. Mm-hmm. So that is a... So I think I mentioned, you know, before we got on air that I don't make a penny out of that site. It's simply... there to kind of communicate. Well, we kind of give it a really cheesy strapline, but it's basically about the business of athlete experiences. So it's all stuff around sponsorship. So it's very much geared towards an industry audience. Mm-hmm. But yeah, if people are interested in, you know, you can find out stuff about the latest new products, the latest staff appointments, as well as, you know, company results and sponsorships, that kind of thing in OCR as well as you know, triathlon run and cycle.
Excellent. Good. Well, thank you very much for your time, Gary. It was great to chat to you. Stay safe, stay healthy.
And you guys.
Thanks for joining us today.
If you come across any big sponsors in OCR, I know two great athletes will happy help out.
I'll let you know.
Cheers, Gary.
Thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate it.
That was an excellent episode. If you want to connect with us more, you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and we are also on the YouTube.
And if you want to support us, we really would appreciate, we are actually now on Patreon. So if you go over to www.patreon.com/OCR audio, you can donate to our short course, our long course, support the podcast. We then open to a world of goodies, including our Audio White group, which is our Patreon members, which is basically access to our Facebook group, to the pros and us, to ask questions, banter and chat and get extra media stuff, as well as you're going to be enrolled into competitions, money off at Field Fit, which is my training center. All these great things that you can do just for as little as £5 a month. That supports us. It keeps us giving you great content. It keeps us updating our software, hardware, microphones, things like that. So your support would be very much appreciated. Thank you very much, guys.
Thanks, guys.